Welcome to the Mets Pod. On today's show, we're talking about the Friday night comeback, the Mets stunning the Phillies in the ninth inning, breaking down Chris Bassitt's hot start. Maybe time to talk a little extension for one of the Mets' most reliable starting pitchers. And we're going to look at the farm system update, Francisco Alvarez, Alex Ramirez, and a lot of players that are off to a hot start and maybe some that are cooling down. And of course, a mega mailbag on today's show. Not just one question, not just two questions. We're diving deep into all of the mailbag questions on today's Mets Pod. So reminder, subscribe to the Mets Pod at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Mets Pod. The Mets with a stunning comeback, one of the more stunning comebacks in recent history in Philadelphia on Friday night. Joe and I are going to get into all of that to kick off today's show. And this team has not lost a series to start out this season. And we're not even in April anymore. We are in May. The Mets have not lost a series. I believe they were the first team to get to 20 wins in baseball. So things are riding high right now for the New York Mets. Joe, let's bring you in. How you doing? How you feeling?
I mean, how could we be complaining at this point? Like you said, they have not lost the series at all to start the season. It's not April. It's not even really the beginning of May anymore. We're getting close to the middle of May, which means we're getting closer to June, where they just have not lost the series. So they're playing fantastic ball right now. Everything is clicking, and you know, it's just a wonderful thing to see.
It really is. And let's dive right into it before we get into the nitty-gritty of this team. There's a highlight every week, right? Last week, we had on pitching coach Jeremy Hefner. We talked about the no-hitter. Obviously, it's a Friday night magic at this point. This week, the big comeback in Philadelphia, stunning the Phillies, a game where for most of it, about eight innings of it, this was a lifeless team. Taijuan Walker had a rough start. They're down 7-1. And then everything changed in an instant. And, you know, we got to start with this, Joe. And I'm sure I'd have the same question for our listeners. Honestly, were you watching? And I'm not talking about when Nimmo got up. I'm not talking about just when they tied it or took the lead with Starling Marte's big crack to the wall. Were you watching when things kicked off in the top of that inning?
I feel like we're in a trust tree here. And I feel like I could just be really honest. Absolutely not. I was not watching. I turned it off. They're down big. I was just like, chalk it up as an L. And then I just was casually looking at MLB at bat on my phone, checking scores. And I go, oh, Lindor hit a home run. Still only 7-3. Still a ways to go. Then I put it down. I pick it back up. JD Davis hits the double. It's now 7-5. I go, oh, okay. I got to turn this bad boy back on. And yeah, so from the right after the JD Davis double on, I was tuned in and I saw the end, but I was certainly not tuned in for the entire inning. And it's shameful, but here we are.
Yeah, so I started out with the game on as well as the Rangers playoff game on. And when, you know, Taijuan had a rough go of it, I was like, I really don't need to sit through this when they're getting demolished right now. I'll check in here and there. I'm going to watch the Rangers playoff game. And then as the Rangers game was ending, of course, I check in on the score and I'm like, okay, Lindor hit a home run. This is good, especially if you are a fantasy baseball player that has stock in Francisco Lindor, you'll take anything you can get. And then they kind of just started to scrape together hit after hit. And you're like, no way, especially when there was two outs, right? When there's two outs, you're kind of waiting for the inevitable, whether it's the soft ground out to first base that always ends the game, or whether it's the strike three, big strike zone, because the umpire wants to get to dinner. But not only did they scrape together hits, it was the fact that they worked really, really good at bats. They were getting ahead in counts, or they were hanging in there with two strikes. And then, I mean, let's be real, they were against the Phillies closer at the end of that there, where they weren't beating up on just long relievers trying to get them through the game to save arms. I mean, the Phillies were really up against it. They knew that. JD Davis coming off the bench cold and scorching one down the left field line, I think, is what really turned this into, okay, we're hanging on for dear life to, hey, we have a shot at this thing. And I think it kind of speaks to the identity of what the Mets have been for the first, month and a half of this season at this point, that a lot of teams in a long season where there are a million games, can look at it and go, hey, we'll get him tomorrow. We'll pack it in. We'll get it tomorrow. It was not our night. Let's be real. Our starting pitching didn't really give us a big chance in this one, and we can never get it going. And when Lindor hit that home run in the ninth and they started to get ducks on the pond, everybody kind of looked at each other and had the next man up mentality. And it played to something we talked about on last week's show, that when you make contact and you do play a little bit of small ball and you find ways to get runners on, things can happen. And that's been the story of this Mets team through almost 30 games of the season so far.
This is just going to be an annoying team to face. Like
Annoying, yes.
Yeah, if you're a Phillies fan, a Braves fan, or a fan of any other team, when you face the Mets, it's just going to be annoying. These guys are going to slap the ball and put it in play. They're going to foul pitches off. You have guys like Nimmo that are going to work 10 pitch at bats. And, you know, it's a team that is simply not going to give up. And I think that's a good sign for going forward for the rest of the season. I mean, doesn't mean they're going to have this type of comeback again. I mean, they've never done it before. They were 0-330 or whatever it was, like 0-330 or something, and it was like the first time they did it. So this is not something that's going to routinely happen. But I'll tell you this, the next time the Mets are down in the ninth, I ain't turning my TV off. I'm keeping it on just in case. And if they lose the next one 7-2 or 7-1, so be it. But I'm not missing another one of these type of comebacks, because clearly this is a team that's showing that they're capable of doing it on any given night.
Yeah, and an awesome job picking up Taiwan Walker on a night where he didn't have it. There's been a lot of nights Walker has been the reason they've won games, and obviously for the last over a year now. So big one for Taiwan Walker. All right, let's move to somebody else in the starting rotation here. How can we not talk about Chris Bassitt, right? And where would this team be without Chris Bassitt? You know, Scherzer's been a little rocky. Let's call it what it is. He's been okay, but he hasn't been, you know, he's going to unlock that form that he always does when we get closer to summer, that we know Max Scherzer, who, you know, what he's been for a long time. Tyler McGill, the hot start. Carlos Carrasco, the hot start. But when you look at Bassitt so far, he's been everything as advertised and more, whether it's when he's on the mound, going pretty deep into games, a variety of pitches, but also off the mound, the leadership element that he's presented for the young starters on the staff, the young relievers on this staff. I think honestly, I know it's really early, Joe, but this feels like a home run for the Mets this year, especially the fact that they acquired him before Jacob deGrom was lost for the start of this season. Bassitt has stepped into that number two role, and if anything, he looks like he could be the top dog of this rotation moving forward.
I'm just going to say, I love Chris Bassitt. Like, everything he brings to the table, I mean, he's a little older. I believe he's 33 now, and, you know, he's coming up on free agency, which I think is going to be an interesting discussion here over the next, you know, month, because after the lockout, players that were eligible for arbitration, they're going to be settling it in season. And the Mets and Bassitt did not agree on a deal. I think they're like 700 grand apart or something like that. So I wonder if this conversation is going to shift towards a short-term extension rather than just a one-year deal to avoid arbitration. I know Bassitt told, I believe it was the New York Post, that he's loved it here.
He's actually surprised, right?
Yeah, surprised how much he loved it here.
That was funny.
And that he'd be open to an extension. And like you said, I think obviously his talent speaks for itself. I mean, he's a guy that I think is going to age well. So if you want to tack on, you know, another 2 or 3 years onto this thing, I think he'll be okay. He's not reliant on velocity. He's not reliant on overpowering people. He is reliant on outsmarting you and being deceptive. He throws upwards of 6 or 7 pitches, just different variations of things. And the leadership that you noted, him and Max Scherzer have been unreal. I mean, you see Tyler McGill come off the mound. You saw David Peterson come off the mound. And the first thing you'd see the next inning when the cameras would pan to the dugout is Bassitt on the left, Scherzer on the right, a young pitcher in the middle, and them holding a tablet and going through whatever they're going through. So his leadership, his experience, his obvious talent and ability to get hitters out and pitch deep into games, that's another thing, because you're seeing a lot this season throughout the game of pitchers getting pulled after 4, getting pulled after 5. You're seeing teams kind of trend in that direction. The Mets have two of the kind of old school guys in Bassitt and Scherzer that are, you know, willing to take the ball deeper into games.
Yeah, and I think when you're a pitcher that uses a lot of off-speed stuff, you're not constantly relying on velocity to get you out of situations. You're a guy that can pitch deeper into games, or you might not burn out the same way. When you look at Bassitt, All four starts he had in April, he pitched six innings. The first start he had in May, seven innings. And then the last start he had, the second start in May, he went 5.2. He almost went six, and he only gave up one earned run. So I think when you look at it right now, he's somebody that's going to take the ball every fifth day. And, you know, you don't have to worry about the bullpen being taxed. You don't have to worry about these things. I think now that we're at the point of the season where everybody's kind of up to speed, they're fully ramped up after the short spring, he's somebody that can give you seven innings. And we've seen that from a veteran in Carrasco as well. We know Scherzer's a guy that just wants to pitch and pitch and pitch. So it's kind of been a weakness for the Mets for a long time that we don't talk about is that, you know, and it's DeGrom's had his fair share of little injuries before some of these bigger ones. They've had younger pitchers that aren't fully ramped up. They're a team that has relied on the bullpen for four innings a night. And now you have these veteran starters in Carrasco, Bassett, and Scherzer that maybe they can just hand the ball to a Drew Smith in the eighth and Diaz in the ninth or something along those lines. And Joe, that makes a gigantic difference for this entire team, the longevity of this team, and the fact that they can go face a lineup, you know, through the order three times and not really seem fazed by it. So I've been a big fan of Bassett. I'm hoping he's somebody that's here beyond the 2022 season, because I think when you look at it with him, he's somebody that is probably a little tired as well from, you know, he started out with the White Sox. He was on the A's for a while. Now he comes all the way across to the East Coast. Like you said, he's 33 years old. Maybe somebody that just wants to settle down. And let's be real, Joe, he probably wants to play for an organization at this point of his career that is just strictly about winning baseball games. And that's what the Mets have shown to be from the offseason, from moving on from Cano, and I'm sure at the deadline moving forward.
I think another factor, too, with Bassett and potentially an extension is I believe he's from Ohio.
He is.
So I do think he wants to probably be a little close. I mean, New York to Ohio is certainly not an easy drive, but, you know, it's not a cross-country flight difference. So I do think he would like to be on the East Coast. And I think he sees what the Mets are building here. I think he realizes this is a good place to be where they're going to utilize the analytics side of the game. I think he has a good relationship with Jeremy Hefner in the really early going. And to me, I think Bassett's a guy that should stick around if the Mets are able to work something out in season. I think that would be fantastic because they're going to have a lot of work to get to in the offseason. There's a lot of free agents, basically most of the bullpen. Potentially Jacob deGrom with the opt-out. There's a lot of things they're going to have to do in the offseason. So if they're able to wrap up someone like Bassett, I don't want to say now, but prior to settling an arbitration number, I think that would probably be beneficial for them for the, you know, coming months.
So what do you think that looks like with Bassett, an extension?
It's tough. So he's 33, and I don't think you really want to go 4 years on him. I think you'd really like to keep it to a three-year deal if you can. And it's got to be at least qualifying offer type money. Like you have to imagine it's in the 18 to $20 million a year range. Something like that would kind of be my best bet where he gets a good pay bump. Cause I mean, right now the amount that they're, you know, quabbling over in arbitration is $9 million versus 8.3 or something in that neighborhood where it's like, That would be a massive pay bump if you go from that to 18, 19, 20. And if he really likes it here, maybe it's, all right, do I need to nickel and dime the Mets for every penny? Not necessarily. Maybe you take, you know, couple million off maybe what you could get if you waited the free agency, but then it'd be unpredictable as to where you were going to go. So I think the safety here would be good for him. And my guess is 3 years, $60 million, give or take, and you know, maybe there's a fourth year option or something like that to elongate it. But I would try to avoid going for guaranteed if I could.
All right. A reminder, you are listening to the Mets Pod. Subscribe to the Mets Pod at Apple Podcasts, Spotify. You can watch on SMY's YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. All right, Joe, let's take a look at what's going on in the farm system lately. We touched on the show a couple weeks ago, the scorching start Francisco Alvarez had in Double-A ball. Now, I know he has not only come back down to earth a little bit, but it feels like he's hit a rough patch. So what have you seen from Alvarez in Binghamton so far? Is this something I don't want to say to be concerned about because that's ridiculous for a prospect that has thrived everywhere he's gone. I believe he's one of the youngest players in Double-A right now. He is also taking on a very difficult position in trying to become a better catcher. But what do you think Alvarez is going through right now?
he is the youngest player in the Double Eastern League.
There you go.
So there's no one younger. So right now he's facing guys that are the average age of the league is near 24 years old. So he's facing guys 4 years older than him.
And he's 20.
Just on average. And he's 20. So it's one of those things that Alvarez is a stud talent. You know, I don't need to keep repeating, you know, it's 70 grade power. He can hit the ball as hard as anyone in all of minor league baseball. Like, that's there. But the reality is, at 20 years old, which Jacob Resnick, who I do Mets Perspective with here at SNY, he tweeted just yesterday, Alvarez played his 162nd career minor league game. So for all the hype and everything he's done, he has just now played one full major league season's worth of, or minor league season's worth of games. So it's crazy to think how inexperienced he is. And the fact that he's in Double A alone is a credit to his talent. So it's one of those things that I think he's hitting a rough patch. It's going to happen. And I have zero doubt that he's going to come out the other end, but I'll say it's definitely going to change the conversation. And I've gotten a few less tweets about call Alvarez up. Got a few less of those.
Yeah, I would imagine. On a much lighter note in the farm system, and Alvarez is going to figure it out. I have zero concern about him right now. But Alex Ramirez right now, a guy that the Mets in the 2019-2020 international signing period gave over a $2 million bonus. So this was a big investment at the time. He's almost been, in a way, buried in the conversation. I know not for you, Joe, because of how much minor league coverage you do, but in the surface-level prospect scene, because we've seen Brett Beatty perform at a high level. We've seen Mauricio have his moments. We've seen Vientos have some big-time moments. And we talk about Francisco Alvarez all the time. But when you look at Alex Ramirez, a guy that, you know, got to play, obviously, in St. Lucie last year for the first time we've seen him in the Mets organization, was okay. He is off to a scorching start with a .385 batting average, some pop, driving in runs. We know he's got a little bit of speed. He's a big kid, 6'3", 200 pounds. I think he plays all three outfield spots. I'm sure he'll settle into a corner at that size. You don't know? Okay, he's got some center field potential. Take it away.
The Mets believe he has center field potential. So if you look at him, he's a big kid, but if you look at him, it doesn't look like he's tacking on another 30 pounds to that frame. Like, there might be a room for a little more growth, but I think he's a center fielder long-term. You know, he's played some left, he's played some right. I believe he's going to stick in center, which his speed, like, he has above average speed. He's a guy that he's the best bet in the organization to represent all five tools. Like, I don't like to say the five tool player, because then everyone just assumes you're talking about Mike Trout or the elite of the elite. Like, I don't know what his truly elite trait is, but everything is above average. It's above average contact ability. It's above average pop. It's above average speed. It's above average throwing arm. It's above average defense, like, across the board. So, huge fan of Ramirez, and I think you're going to see a lot more of him on the national scene soon. I know that Keith Law at The Athletic preseason ranked him as the number 100 prospect in baseball, and it was Ramirez's first appearance in any major publication's top 100 list. Something tells me the next time we see an update to top 100 list, Alex Ramirez is going to be in every single one of them. He, like you said, struggled a bit in St. Lucie last year as a raw 18-year-old, kind of expected, but now came back to St. Lucie and is tearing it up, and at this point, he's ready for Brooklyn.
Yeah, so Ramirez playing in A-ball right now, one of the younger... The Mets are a young team in the farm system, right? We don't talk about, you know, a lot of the AAA guys, or we're just starting to now. We usually talk about Binghamton. We're going to talk about the St. Lucie team a lot. So he's a 19-year-old. We talked about Alvarez, who's 20. One more 19-year-old to continue on this farm system or close out things with the farm system update. A guy that you and I have followed closely since being a second-round pick in the 2021 draft, Calvin Ziegler, a Canadian pitcher who, you know, right now is showing the kind of stuff he has, Joe, in terms of the strikeout rate is pretty insane at the moment. He's a guy that can miss bats a lot. Now, the command, as expected for a 19-year-old, is still coming into play, but has there been anything that's really popped with you for Ziegler, one of the more promising but very, very young arms in this Mets system?
Yeah, Ziegler is teammates with Ramirez down at Low A St. Lucie, so two of the top prospects are down there in St. Lucie together. But Ziegler was the highest signed draft pick from last year's draft class. The Mets drafted him in the second round after drafting Kumar Rocker and then obviously not signing him. And to me, Ziegler looks kind of as advertised. Like, this is kind of what I expect him to be. I mean, the fastball's up to 97.
Wow.
The curve is really sharp downward movement. Sprinkling in the changeup, I'd like to see more of that. But control and command is something that was a question coming into the draft. And he's showing that that's still a question. But his stuff, when he's throwing strikes, these hitters in low A are not touching him. I think he has like a 3 hits hits per 9 innings. Like, they're not making good contact against him. He's striking out 40% of the batters that he's faced. So he's getting swings and misses. He's inducing weak contact. If he's able to throw more strikes and command his pitches a little bit better, you're looking at a guy with some serious, serious upside. And I know back when the draft happened, there were people that thought the Mets may have reached a bit on Ziegler, but they don't believe they did. They thought they got someone perfectly worth the value of a second round pick. And the early returns suggest he looks the part of an early pick. He doesn't look like someone that should have gone in the fourth round. He looks like someone who should have gone in the second, and he did. And, you know, we know the Mets have a history of developing pitching. So I believe that Ziegler's in a right fit organizationally, and the stuff is just really exciting.
Yeah, and I know you and I were really impressed when we got to talk to him for a long time, obviously before he got down there to St. Lucie. So he's somebody that, for a 19-year-old, really mature. The stuff is excellent, and we think he could put it all together. All right, let's get into the mailbag, because we got a lot of questions today that we're excited to get into. We can never forget about the listeners. Clay Davis has the first question on today's show. He said, if you had to sell one Mets player stock today, who would it be? For purposes of making this interesting, please only consider guys off to good start. So this is kind of an interesting one. This is basically not buying that whatever they're doing is sustainable. So a little bit of a pessimistic view, but also we like to keep it real here on the Mets Pod. Joe, whose stock would you sell? It might not be that you're out on the player, but you just don't think they can keep this up.
That's exactly how I was going to preface it. Like, we're going to be selling stock here. It doesn't mean we think this player's bad or they're not going to perform for the rest of the season. But I think what Mark Canna is doing right now is probably not too sustainable. I mean, his barrel rate is not high. His hard hit rate is not high. His exit velocity is not high. He's hitting singles for the most part. Like, it's a guy that I don't think the batting average that you're seeing is sustainable. I think you'll see him fall to his career norms. You will get, of course, the good eye at the plate. He sees as many pitches as almost anyone in baseball. So he's always going to have that. You know, I talked about that last week with Nimmo and others, that like, that's a trait that doesn't really go through peaks and valleys. But as far as all his contact that he's doing right now, I think that one's going to come back to life a little bit. Doesn't mean Canna's going to be, you know, reserved to be a bench player or something, but he's just probably not going to hit 320.
I think that's fair. I think for me, I'm going to look at the bullpen and go with, unfortunately, Chase and Shreve, who I hope proves me wrong here. And I'm not saying Shreve can't be a huge piece of this bullpen, because the reality is he is right now. But the fact is he is having a career year by a mile right now. Shreve, in almost 12 innings, has given up only 2 earned runs. But, you know, and he's striking out over 13 per 9, which is remarkable, and obviously a career high for him as well. What I think isn't sustainable for Shreve right now, Joe, is that he's a guy that's been beat up a little bit in the past by the long ball, and he has not given up a home run this year. So I'm just wondering, right now, let's keep it real, Joe, Shreve is on a loop type pace this year. Shreve is on pace to be the Mets version of Aaron Loop. He's actually pitching a little better at this moment. Can he really do this after being... Well, he wasn't even a true roster invite in camp. Wasn't he a minor league invite?
Yeah, he was a minor league deal with an invite to camp. So I remember when we talked earlier on this podcast, on one of the earlier episodes, that we thought the Mets didn't adequately replace Aaron Loop because they just based it around a small trade for Joely Rodriguez, who's also been very good of late, and then the minor league deal with Chase and Shreve. I'm also going to mention one of my good friends, big Mets fan, loves Chase and Shreve, and he's going to listen to this podcast. He's going to be really pissed at you.
I'm sorry.
But, I mean, ultimately, do I think everything Chase and Shreve is doing is sustainable? Probably not. Like you said, he hasn't given up a home run yet. He has been susceptible to it. You imagine that's eventually going to come forward. And he's not really a 13 strikeout per nine kind of guy, but you know, maybe they did make some changes in his delivery and within his stuff that maybe he's more of a, you know, a 9 to 9.5. Maybe he is a strikeout per inning guy, which is great for, you know, a lefty reliever, especially one you got on a minor league deal. But yeah, I mean, I don't think Chasen Shreve is going to be completely unhittable for the rest of the season. Sorry, Kevin.
It is fascinating for a guy that's been in the majors for almost a decade right now to appear to be unlocking something that we have not seen from him. And I think it's a credit to Jeremy Hefner. I really do. And I'm not saying that because, you know, we had Hefner on the pod last week. Joe and I have been big fans since that hire was made. There, you can see drastic improvement, not just in the starting rotation, but in the bullpen. And I think Hefner deserves a lot of credit for that. All right, another question, and the name of this person is just unbelievable. It fits the Mets Pods brand. Drew Smith Stan account says, "Any yeah, it's not Joe or I promise.
No. Yeah.
This is somebody trying to be the third host of the show. He said, any likelihood they target a catcher like Wilson Contreras? Now, I think the thought of that question is Contreras is set to hit free agency finally after this season. He is somebody that has obviously been one of the best offensive catchers in baseball for a little bit of time now. The Cubs are a team that they've shown little fear letting big-time players walk in free agency, especially, you know, bats. So, you know, Joe, my quick thoughts, my initial thoughts before I throw this to you is, I don't see them making that kind of move where, in my opinion, Contreras, if the Cubs view themselves as sellers at the deadline again, I think he would fetch a pretty decent return, even as a rental, because of the position he can play and the offensive punch he brings. I'll be honest with you, Joe. Every team has their dents, their warts. I think catcher right now is just one for the Mets. I don't think they're a team that's going to try to overcorrect this position.
I agree. I think when you look at James McCann, obviously the contract that he's under. So James McCann is going to be here. And I think they value his defense and leadership behind the plate. Even though it seems like Scherzer has leaned a little more to pitching to Nito, although he did throw to McCann in his last start. But I think McCann behind the plate is he's a good receiver. He's a good thrower. I think he brings that value. Obviously, you would like it if he wouldn't ground the double plays and, you know, you get a little more out of the bat. And Tomas Nito, to me, is a guy that he's kind of your prototypical backup where if you play him, he's probably going to do okay. And obviously, his defense is great behind the plate. Huge throwing arm and a great receiver as well. But I don't necessarily see the need to go out and get someone different for the position. I mean, McCann's under contractual control, obviously, like I mentioned. And Tomas Nito is out of minor league options. So what,
this is it.
So what is the solution? Are they going to just eat McCann's contract to trade top prospects to get a guy like Wilson Contreras? I find that a little hard to believe. I think you'll see them address, you know, like we mentioned last week, power, the bullpen, depending on what happens. If they need another starter, they could always go down that route. I think that's probably, you know, our early trade deadline guess would be that. I'd be pretty surprised, you know, barring some significant injury, that catcher would be any kind of a priority.
All right, another one. This is from Robbie. This is a good one. He said, I know these things have a way of working themselves out. That's usually how Joe and I answer anything related to having too many arms, but we'll still go through it, Robbie. But assuming DeGrom comes back around the deadline, do you think a six-man rotation is in play to keep the rotation fresh enough for the playoffs? I'd love to see the six-man rotation if everyone is healthy to make a run.
I don't see it. I just think when you look at guys like Jake and then you look at Max and you look at Bassett, those are creatures of habit to the point that they're not going to want to pitch less. And to be honest, I don't think the Mets should be looking to pitch DeGrom, Scherzer, or Bassett any less than they have to. And obviously, if you go to a six-man, that pushes them off and they make less starts. But he prefaced it perfectly. These things work themselves out. When DeGrom comes back, something else is going to have gone awry in the rotation, and it's going to be the perfect time for him to come back, whether that's an injury or, you know, Taiwan Walker maybe struggles or Tyler McGill comes back to earth a little bit, you know, whatever it may be. This stuff will always work itself out, but I think a six-man rotation won't work with the personalities in this rotation, I don't think.
So my biggest take on it is, and this is something we have touched on briefly, is that I don't think there'll be a six-man rotation, but I like that it would open the door for David Peterson to operate as a reliever rather than, keeping him stretched out down in AAA for being the Mets' insurance option if somebody got hurt, doubleheaders, all of those things. And Peterson has pitched really well this year, went up with the big league club. I know he's had his ups and downs in AAA, but I would love to have a lefty of Peterson's caliber that can pitch more than an inning as a bullpen option. If you feel like you have six starting arms besides him, we could play it that say they really were all healthy. We know DeGrom's going to be there. We know Scherzer and Bassett are going to be there. I don't see how you take away anything from Carlos Carrasco or Tyler McGill right now. I think that question answers itself. What you do with Walker, once again, these things figure themselves out. But Joe, that would be the big one to me, is that you can actually improve your bullpen rather than having to worry about that six-man rotation.
That's a great way to look at it, because, you know, we talked about David Peterson on last week's show, and, you know, I recommended, you know, keep him in AAA, keep him stretched out. But if we're getting into August and, you know, you're in the midst of a pennant race and trying to win a division, it should be, you know, really all hands on deck at that point. So having a lefty that can go multiple innings, like you said, I think makes a ton of sense in the bullpen. And, you know, you might even have a guy like Taijuan Walker. Maybe he ends up falling into the bullpen, you know, if all things go great and everyone's healthy, happy, pitching well. You know, maybe you have kind of two long relievers in Peterson and Walker that could pitch on double headers, or, you know, come in if a starter gets knocked out early and give you those innings. Because as you get further along in the season, you want to be much more careful with how you're utilizing your back end bullpen guys. Because if this team's destined for the playoffs, you're going to want the Diazes, the Lugos, the Drew Smiths, not tired or exhausted. You want them, you know, full go.
And I think it preserves a guy like Walker that really had his second half struggles last year. And we know his injury passed as well. All right, one more question on the Mega Mailbag today. And this is a tough one. This is from Milo Kramstein, who said, between Nimmo, Bassett, and Diaz, who should be the top candidate for an extension? And what could those deals look like?
What the deals look like is probably a pretty convoluted question.
Yeah, let's get into how you prioritize these and how many you think you can retain.
So I would prioritize Bassett, like we talked about kind of me at too. The top of the show. That's a now decision. I think with a guy like Diaz and Nimmo, those guys make them qualifying offers to start in the offseason and then hit an extension after that. And to be honest, I think they can pay them all if they want to. I mean, right now, according to what I'm keeping for records for next year's luxury tax payroll, it's sitting at $123 million where we stand. That's because you have the opt-out for DeGrom. You have a player option on Taijuan Walker. You have a club option on Carlos Carrasco. You have almost the whole bullpen as free agents, like I mentioned earlier. So the team's probably going to look a little different in 2023 than it does in 2022, just by virtue of how many people are free agents. But with their current payroll structure, I don't see why they can't keep them all. And I would go Bassett, Diaz, Nimmo. I think Diaz has really proven himself to be a top three or so closer in the game. And I'm sure I'll get plenty of tweets about that, because we know that's a hot button topic. Diaz, to me, I think he's just performing lights out. He's so confident, comfortable. He's been in his delivery pretty much all season, and we know when that gets out of whack, his stuff gets out of whack, and that's when you see the home runs happen. So to me, that's how I'd prioritize it, and they're all going to make really good money. So it's going to be interesting to see how they kind of put this whole puzzle together.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing, right? And when you look at it and go, can you find a way to keep them all? And if you can't, how do you try to get creative, right? Here's a perfect example. If we had this conversation last year, Marcus Stroman was a big topic. They let Stroman walk. He got a really, really good deal. They traded for Chris Bassett. There's no denying Chris Bassett is a way, way better pitcher than Marcus Stroman, and he has been this year. Marcus Stroman has not had a good start. The Mets look like they made a brilliant decision in when weighing those options. Now, I don't want to play that game again. I would like to keep Bassett around. I'm with you, Joe. He'd be my top priority. And I would make Diaz second. I think they have a little bit of insurance in the outfield, or shown that they can go find production in the outfield. How many times did we discuss what are the Mets going to do to replace the production of Michael Conforto? Obviously, the Marte deal, obviously the Canna deal, those are deals we're big fans of. They're getting early returns on those deals already. You usually can find a way to replace outfield production. But it's also a matter of, is Marte going to move to center field? There's a lot of different things there when you're weighing the potential loss of Nimmo, but there's also the injury concern. So I agree. There's so much potential money coming off the books that there's a way you can retain all of them. But it also comes down to being a little smart and not overplaying your hand and not throwing a ton of money out the door right away. And like you said, extending the qualifying offer out of the gate is one way to do it. But I think the most important point that you made is Bassett does feel like the guy that if he's open to having discussions in season, which it sounds like from everything we've heard he is, he should be the guy that you try to get done now. So you have some short-term stability in the rotation with him, Scherzer, God forbid DeGrom really does leave. It doesn't feel like the sky is falling if you're 1-2 is Scherzer and Bassett.
Yeah, and you'd have Tyler McGill as well, and you have Carlos Carrasco. You
bring Carrasco back in that situation.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Carrasco's team option is like $14 million, which in this landscape, if Carrasco continues to pitch as he is, that's a bit of a bargain. So that would feel like a kind of no-brainer pickup. Taiwan Walker's player option is only like $7 or $8 million, so I have to imagine he would opt out. Can't imagine he'd be taking that one. But they're going to have, like I said, a lot of money off the books, but a lot of free agents. And either A, you need to re-sign those free agents, or B, you need to replace those guys. And it's not like the farm system is, gushing with major league ready talent where you just say, just let these guys go and bring up so-and-so. It's not really the situation. So if they don't extend someone like Nimmo, who we both had third in our pecking order, you'll have to find another outfielder somewhere. And, I don't have the free agent list in front of me, but I'm sure that's a conversation for later in this summer. But if you could keep Nimmo, I think he's a great fit for this offense. I love him at the top of the order, drawing walks, working counts, getting on base for Lindor and Pete and Marte and, the whole middle of this order. I think he's a perfect fit. So if they could keep them all, that'd be great. There's just obviously going to be some work that they have to do to kind of put the puzzle together.
Yeah, without a doubt. All right, obviously huge week coming up for the Mets. They see the Nationals yet again. They have the Mariners coming into town, and then early next week, we might be recapping some fireworks with the Cardinals coming into town. We know what happened there last time. Joe, closing thoughts as the Mets continue to roll in the 2022 season.
Hey, like I said last week, I'm going to keep saying it until it happens. Just keep rolling. Win a series at a time. That's all you can do. And I'll tell you, I'm going to be at the game on Saturday against Seattle. I want to see the game close. Two outs, ninth, Mets up two or three, and Diaz versus Jared Kelenic.
Oh, my God.
Bring it on. Bring it on.
Oh, man. That would be something. With the way things are going for Kelenic right now, he might not even be in the lineup when you go to the game. Sorry, Joe. And then to be fair, things didn't work out for the Mets and Cano. So Sugar might be the last man standing from the deal that caused a lot of different opinions. All right. Thanks so much, everybody, for sending the mailbag questions. They really helped drive the show when we can get more of them. We had a lot of fun. And a reminder to subscribe to the Mets Pod at Apple Podcasts, Spotify. You can watch on SMY's YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks so much. We'll catch you next week.